everybody. This is Again With This, Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 4, Episode 23, Run, Billy, Run. And now, here are your hosts,
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello.
Hi.
Let's talk about this episode in just a second after we tell you what's happening on Patreon. Again with this, episode 75 is dropping December 10th. Let's watch Luke Perry in Spin City. The episode is called Kiss Me Stupid. It's season one and, depending on the source, either episode 16 or episode 17. Streaming for free on Pluto TV. We will link you to that in the show notes.
And before that, the next Again With Them, which is our digest recap of Jenny and Tori's podcast, 90210 OMG, will be dropping on Thursday, December 9th. It will encompass all of November and one December episode. That is a perk for our Patreon supporters at the $5 level and up, and we hope that you will join us.
We surely do. You can find all of that and so very much more at patreon.com/againwiththis. Now, let's start Run, Billy, Run with the E-plot. We're into E's now. There's too many people on the show, officially.
Yes, there are.
But our E-plot is, Alan's wedding is, unsurprisingly, a problem for Matt. At the hospital, Matt bitches about the size of Alan and Val's wedding, and Alan tries to soothe him, kind of. And while they're quietly fighting, David walks by and pauses when he sees them together. And Matt wants Alan to prove the wedding's not a big deal by going on a trip with Matt immediately afterward. But Alan and Val are going to have to go on a honeymoon to sell the illusion. And apparently this is the first Matt is hearing about that part. And by the time David has come down the hall toward him and for some reason decided to insert himself in this private conversation that was happening under both his participants' breath. And that's how this goes, clip two.
So the rumors are true then. You're getting married, Alan?
Look, David, why don't you mind your own business? Bachelor party's tomorrow night. Be there, okay? Man, look, I can't get through this without you. Come
on. I know. You can jump out of the cake dressed like Ethel Merman.
That's not bad.
Yeah, no.
But I wonder what music was played over that scene, if it happened, that they could not cut around, because the bachelor party, if it occurs, is not in this episode as we see.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's also just as possible that it happens off screen because it's a Matt plot and no one cares. But also, yeah.
Also, a lot of key conversations in this episode occur off screen. So
yeah.
I'm assuming it's that. Yeah.
Right. But about this, I hate to take Alan's side because Alan sucks. And it's not like David's wrong, but this also totally is not his business. Like, stay out of it.
Yeah. Agree.
You're not helping. You're not moving the needle.
No.
All right, moving on. To our D-plot. That's the E-plot, one scene. D-plot is Sydney attempts to ruin the latest Mancini honeymoon. In her nuptial bed, Kimberly has a nightmare featuring her worst moments from the past couple of seasons, like the car accident, her head scar, the bombing. And Michael wakes up when she starts and he tries to comfort her. But then the phone rings and he thinks it's room service, but it's Sydney looking like wintertime Little Orphan Annie, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Red, screamingly red dress with white collar and cuffs. And it's not terrible given some of the shit we've seen her in, but it's weird.
Yeah. And I just don't understand, even with this, like, you know, new partnership position salary, apparently, how she is affording this parade of vintage attire, but TV.
Yeah. So when Michael tries to get rid of Sydney, she claims he has a patient in terrible distress, but the name that she comes up with is someone who died a while ago. We stay on top of it, Sydney. So then Peter stalks in, wanting his messages, but Sydney informs him that as a partner and office manager, she doesn't take messages anymore, in which case, like, as an office manager, hire a receptionist.
Mm-hmm.
Like, someone has to take the messages? Sorry.
Yeah.
And then she's waiting in the driveway at the beach house when Michael and his dumb convertible Corvette get back, still with a bunch of just married shit hanging off it. Like, it's days later. Clean your car.
Yeah, it's not good for the paint job either.
No.
Yeah.
So while Kimberly and Michael hustle inside the gate, Sydney trails after them, yammering office shit that needs to be handled and begging Michael to come in. And he slams the gate in her face, which, of course, she ignores. And Michael continues ignoring her to pick up Kimberly and carry her over the threshold and then start making out in the house. And Michael tells Sydney she's the office manager. She should be able to manage everything. But as soon as she's gone, Kimberly does a very soapy swoon, which Michael thinks is probably all the excitement. And whatever Sydney is, like, desperate for him to get in and deal with, if it's real, never comes up again. Like, it's not an issue in this episode or the next one. So I assume this is just her trying to interfere and be a pain in the ass.
I think so. And okay. It is a signal of how little the show has for her to do. Like, I love Laura Layton,
yes,
as everybody who listens to this podcast knows, but this is sad. And
yeah,
you need to get rid of the character.
It's a bummer.
It's time. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of bummers, our C plot, Jane gets revenge via prank. We find out that Jane is heading toward a fashion show with nothing to show and no staff to make it. And Allison offers to help her after work. And instead of saying someone who maybe took home ec 10 years ago is really not up to the challenge of putting together a garment to the professional standard required, Jane accepts, and Jake comes by, and Jane has a warning, clip 3.
I don't think I'm going to be much fun for the next couple of days.
Are you ever?
Yeah, I was going to say.
I can't really know the difference.
Seriously.
This is not why he's with you, I'm going to guess. Fun qualities.
No.
So, at the office that night, Joe makes Richard look at the mock-up that she and a bunch of nameless peons have been working on all day. Oh, a jungle-themed runway complete with volcano. The inspiration was all the animal prints. And the funniest part is that when we're going to see, spoiler, that he's like, great, run with it. But when he first looks at it, Patrick Muldoon just looks horrified.
As he should, because it really looks like, well, and for my science project,
yes,
I will prove that baking soda and vinegar, it's like, oh my God.
Yeah. But
also, since when, well, whatever, we'll get into, I bitch about this in the visual aids, actually, like, is it Polynesian or?
Oh.
What, which culture are we offensively appropriating? Because the costumes do not line up with the volcano and the cursed tiki Brady Bunch episode aesthetic of everything, but we will get back to that.
But yes, that's a great point. It is all over the map in terms of influence, where it's just like wild means animals, right? There are animals in other parts of the world. It's a jungle, but it's also the rainforest, but it's also Hawaii. Like, yeah, anyway. Joe says the volcano would actually erupt, which, like, yikes. But he sends the other peons away before asking Joe where her passion for all of this is coming from, given how recently she was accusing him of stealing Jane's designs. But Joe says she had to do it for Richard and for them as a couple. And he kisses her, thank you, and her reaction to his kiss is, once again, very, very weird. Like, she's just looks unsettled and creeped out by it. You can see it in the visual aids because I made a GIF, but...
Yeah.
You know... Just as the question is, why are you working so hard for this when every time we see your unguarded reactions, you look like you hate it? Like, maybe that's the actor.
Yeah. And also, I feel like there's something that's been left on the, like, floor of some room that's like she's being directed to act afraid of him. But this is information that the audience either is not getting from the writing or Patrick Muldoon is not capable, which it could be either. Mm-hmm. I guess we'll just have to see.
Yeah. But he's on board with the volcano for whatever reason. And when he goes outside and gets in his car, we see Jake is also there lurking and glaring. And then he goes in and pulls Joe aside to lead off with this, clip 4.
I don't know if Richard stole Jane's designs or not. And you know what? I don't really care.
Why not?
Right. Don't you? It seems like you should. You know, like, even if you're not dating Jane, which you are, like, it's kind of a big deal if he did, you know?
Yeah. Like, you know, we're not fucking any of these people, so we really don't care, but maybe you should since you are.
Right. This really reminded me of the moment when Kimberly showed up at Shooters and was like, everyone else at the complex is cold to me, and Jake is like, hey, I don't judge. Like, she tried to bomb you.
Yeah. You know, like, Why? Start judging.
Yeah. Anyway, apparently Jake is there behind Jane's back to ask Joe to find him some sewers and cutters that Jane can use, which is like Jane's industry, also her town. She should either know some of those already or be able to find them herself.
Mm-hmm.
You would think. Anyway, Joe tries to act tough, rhetorically asking why she would do that, but Jake knows that Joe cares about Jane. And apparently he's right, because when we next check in on Jane, she's got a whole sweatshop set up in the garage and is sending her seamstresses home for the night. And Jake thinks Jane's designs are beautiful. Nah, she thinks they look like last year. Not necessarily the problem, they're just bad. But
yeah.
I'm glad you sent home the people who worked so hard all day constructing them for you before you said they sucked.
Yeah, and then knocked them all on the ground and got them dirty.
She sure does. She says she's grateful for Allison and Jake's help, but she's canceling the show. And then it's the dumb fucking jungle show.
Oh, my God.
The stage is, I mean, no pun intended, bananas. Like, it's crazy.
Okay, imagine every like high school production of South Pacific that ever existed with like two kids on either side of the wings and a sheet painted blue that they're just like waving. It's that, except they hired someone again from the, you know, feast scene of the Brady Bunch, and then Vincent Price bursts onto the stage wearing a leopard print miniskirt. God, I wish.
Yeah.
These designs are so terrible.
Yeah, they are. But we're not even to those yet. So backstage, Richard worries to Joe that this all might not work. And Jane, we see, is also there with Jake, drinking and trying to save face. And the volcano belches a bunch of flames. Some hula dancers come out and eat fire. And the collection is, I regret to inform you, called Animal Instinct. It is, of course, bad, as you can see in the flames.
If you dare.
Yeah. Joe takes a break from shooting it to race backstage and tell Richard how great it is, while in the audience, Jane points out each look that is hers, apparently all of them. And eventually she announces to Jake that she's going to the can, but she actually sneaks backstage, continuing to drink. And when she tips her head back to drain her glass, she sees a sprinkler up near the ceiling and then looks at the volcano and then takes a tiki torch from the edge of the stage and holds it up to activate the sprinklers. And somehow there's no one around the wings of this fashion show on her side. Like, not how it works, but
yeah, no.
So then she, as the water rains down, she opens her mouth, which, like, I'm pretty sure from living in LA around this time, that would be wastewater. Like, you are going to get cholera. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Also, this goes on forever. There's three different sequences of her, like, four weddings and a funeraling. Like, was it raining? I hadn't noticed. We get it.
Yeah.
If you're running short, I don't know, maybe put some of the conversations and the more important plots on screen.
Yeah.
Just a suggestion.
Please. So when Richard runs out to try and stop all the guests from leaving, he slips in a puddle on the runway and falls on his ass, and Jane cracks up, and it is funny, because slapstick is funny. Sorry.
It is.
And the next day, Jane is walking out of her place in time to hear Richard and Joe fighting about Joe's having done something special for the show that he assumes caused the catastrophe. And as Jane continues eavesdropping, she hears Joe once again cast doubt on whether Richard actually did design those looks, and faintly smirks, but that's where we leave it for now. She's getting away with it. For now.
Mm-hmm.
On to the B-plot. Oh, God. Billy turns heel / sex spy. I mean, the heel turn already happened. This is just a new level. So we open on Allison in bed as Habanera from Carmen starts playing. Very corny choice, at least it's in the public domain. And she sees Billy coming down the hall with a flower, and her reaction is the same as mine, clip 5.
Oh, no, get away from me.
Yeah, I mean,
Yeah.
And yet, there you are.
Well,
in his bed? Okay.
Yeah, this is, you know, I'm going to say a problem with a lot of people in this plot line, spoiler, which is like, you know, when you sleep with Billy, bad stuff happens to you and it's on you. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. At this point, it fully is.
Yeah. So apparently they fucked after the wedding. Allison's still not totally sure how it even happened. Clip 6.
One second, we're fighting.
The next, I'm Rudolph Valentino, the greatest lover that's ever lived.
Come on.
Oh, Allison, give in to your passion.
Oh,
one
no.
more kiss, one more embrace.
Okay, this I had to clip because it's terrible. Rudolph Valentino was not Russian. But this is just more evidence for your theory that the writers hate Andrew Hsu and are just like, what thing can we give him to not be able to do this week?
Yeah. Like, and, what have we not tried to show him up? Like, I think it's really not necessary at this point. Proof of concept has been visited upon us all. But it's like, oh, another accent. It's like, yeah. We see you.
We do.
We see you.
We see you into the past. So by the time Allison comes out to the living room, she's mad for real and calls into the office to say she'll be late. But Billy grabs the phone and tells Amanda they're actually both taking the day off to celebrate closing Madge and Mabel. And Amanda would like to know when Billy sets his own hours, never mind Allison's. And he's like, since right now, and hangs up on her, does not get fired. And as Allison goes to her place to get ready for work, she yells for the whole complex to hear that she doesn't know who Billy is anymore. And so he recaps it for the new viewers who probably turned it off right after he mentioned making love to Allison over and over the previous night. But Jake also comes out in time to hear this. So when Allison says the last time didn't count, Jake makes a face like, what does that mean? Which is very funny and is in the visual aids in GIF form. So Allison repeats, she's not moving in with Billy. It is too soon. And he throws her Haley cohabitation timeline back in her face. So she snaps that she and Billy are not a couple and are, in fact, finished until he is himself again. And he's like, you snooze, you lose, which like, lose what this? Everyone's fine. Yikes.
Yeah.
So when we see Allison next, she's dressed and on her way to work when she stops by Jane's studio. Like, she isn't already late enough for Amanda to have been in a meeting when Allison phoned before, and also says she'll see Jane to help her with her fashion line at 5, which, like, no, you're going to stay late because you were late.
Yeah. Also, you don't just, like, pitch an account and land it, and then someone else works on it. That's not...
Right. Yeah.
Go write the fucking copy. Jesus.
Yeah. You know this bitch is going to roll into the office late with a Starbucks, too. She's going to do that one.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anyway, that night, Billy shows up at Bobby's place to talk business with Amanda. And please go to the visual aids to see the teeny tiny television in Bobby's living room. We're supposed to think this guy is rich enough to just start a cable company from scratch. This TV is like for a bedroom or a bathroom or something. Like, it's, I know the past, but it's so small.
I mean, and you think that's not like painful to watch, but actually my loft in Toronto, my sublet had like a 14 inch TV that was like way across the room. And I was like, I guess I'll just put this on my lap like a baby. Which it is smaller than,
So Billy heard from Allison, because he did not in fact go in, that he's supposed to pitch an airline client called Midline. So it seems like he fucked around all day and only started working when his boss was at home in a robe. But apparently he has a file folder in his hand, which he claims contains his pitch. And when Amanda tries to take the folder from him, this occurs. Clip 7.
Okay, this is a big account. Maybe the biggest we've ever seen.
Easily the biggest.
And when I landed with these ideas, what do I get in return?
You get to keep your job.
I figured you might say something like that.
Wait. Where are you going?
Where I go from now on, to the highest bidder.
Are you threatening me?
All I need is a promise that if I land this account, you'll double my salary.
What about Allison?
Forget about Allison. These are my ideas, all right? I call the shots in this campaign.
All right. You have my word. Double your salary if you land Midline Airways.
No! Fired for talking to you like that and for doorstepping you when you're lounging around in front of your micro television. Like, fuck off. None of this is okay.
No, this is not how work works. Like, to the highest bidder... What you're going to walk in the door of another agency and be like, look at my pitch. That's not how it works. It's just not.
Also, no matter what you say, like, if you do that, like, any work product during your time at D&D belongs to D&D. So the fact that the file folder is empty does not absolve you from basically corporate espionage that is illegal. But okay, sure, show.
But since he got a yes, he leaves before Amanda, as Sarah said, opens the folder and sees that there's nothing in it, which, like, Amanda. Outmaneuvered by Billy. Not where you want to be in
Weak.
Life, Amanda.
Yeah.
Come on
Weak.
Now. It's dark. So at the office the next day, where I guess the dress code only applied to Brooke because Billy is just there in a fucking sweater. But Allison shows up trailed by a bunch of D&D drones who don't get any lines. And Billy is commanding them all to stay and divide up the research so they can meet what is, let us not forget, his deadline. And Allison gets worried when she sees that Billy has somehow acquired employee files on people who work for Brooks and Enright, the other agency that's pitching the client. And by the way, a character named Brooke, whom Billy was married to, died, and now he's in a plot line about a company called Brooks. This is a cool decision, writers. Like, open a phone book, find another name.
Phyllis.
Exactly. So Allison's aghast. Is Billy talking about buying the other agency's campaign? And he smugly tells her, something will change hands, but it won't be money. Ew, gross. Change hands.
I don't get it. Shells?
So he goes straight to a bar to find a certain Evie Wainbridge who works for Brooks and Enright and whom he vaguely knows, and they banter about their back-to-back pitches the next day. He pretends to be defeatist about everything, and she tells him to come and work for them. Clip 8.
We're always looking for ballsy, good-looking young reps, you know?
I'm sure you are, but what does that have to do with this conversation?
Seriously.
Also, don't say you're looking for good-looking employees. That's wrong.
Yeah, like, literally against the law.
I mean,
enjoy.
The first of many wrong things in this plotline, spoiler. But as she leaves, she tells him to send her his resume, but he says this, clip 9.
How about I get you that resume tonight? You're working late at the office. I could get it faxed to you. Just need to know where. Your place or mine?
How about the emergency room? Because I've barfed myself inside out.
Also, that's such a weird line. Like, you were talking about fax machines one sentence ago. How did we end at your place or mine already? Like, you gotta work up to that. This isn't the Tinder era.
And since it, like, since you did say it without working up to it, like, why involve the fax machine in
right?
it? Can't you just fucking hand it to her?
Right.
If they're, you're at your place, like,
yeah.
Nice writing, Billy.
Anyway,
Jesus.
Smash, haha, cut to Billy finishing up sex with Evie at her place between her screamingly ugly sheets. And there is no story about these.
Oh,
they're just fucking
God.
Ugly.
Are these the worst sheets yet?
I mean, that's the question, right? I think they are. They're worse than Dylan's.
They are worse than Dylan's. I agree. Because there's not, it's just like all primary colors. And you
yes.
just, it's like being like flicked in the eyeball by Fido Dido. It's terrible.
Yes. I mean, please go to the visual aids and look at it. But it's sort of like the logo design of like In Living Color. It's that sort of like jaggedy lines and like, you know, shapes and stuff, which is, it's a lot. Anyway. Very appropriately and ethically, she tells him he's got the job. Clip 10.
Midline's a fat account. You guys must have something amazing planned.
No. Try the exact same campaign we sold to Comwest 5 years ago. See, the great thing about working for the big agencies is you don't have to try as hard. They buy the name, the prestige, even when you're forcing some tired retread down their throat.
A retread?
Almost word for word, same campaign. Listen, don't take this the wrong way, but you're not planning on spending the whole night, are you?
I'll just grab my clothes and be on my merry way.
At least she made one good decision in there, but Jesus, Evie.
Well, yeah, and I sort of feel like the show is kind of judging her for being like, she deserves whatever happened to her because she's a woman and she didn't even want him to spend the whole night. So therefore, she's a tramp and et cetera.
I think actually the show is judging Billy because it's like, of course she let her guard down. He looks like he's literally a mouth breather. Why
yeah.
would she keep her guard up post-coitally? No
yeah.
need. He's a bonehead.
Yeah, perhaps. Anyway, before he leaves, he goes into the bathroom and smirks at his reflection like a real fucking asshole. And just note that in the visual aids, there's like a 10 pack of the smirks of Billy in this plot line. And sorry, but it had to be done. It's just, it's everything all the time.
And it's so ineffectual. Like, he just looks like he's, I don't even know, struggling to remember whether he left the oven on. And that's not, like, his face is just not built for a heel turn or any turn.
No, because it's not even like a smug smirk. It's just like, I can't stop smiling because I'm a bad actor. You know, like he's about to break in every scene.
Yeah.
Oh my God, another terrible Billy pitch. Hook it directly to my vein. Clip 11.
This, ladies and gentlemen, is what we're not going to give you. A tired retread of an already established campaign. Fly us because grandma flies us? We've all seen this kind of campaign a million times. All right, Allison, take it away. Let's take these guys into the future via the past.
We're on the bluff at Kitty Hawk. Man flies for the first time. Orville and Wilbur's historic 90-second flight. Afterward, they're alone on the bluff, scratching their heads. Sure, it's a great invention, they say, but how do we get to New York by Tuesday? Just then, a midline Airways 737 rockets into view, insignia blazing against a deep blue sky. Orville and Wilbur look at each other and smile. Wilbur says, "Now that is a great idea."
It's our cornerstone, ladies and gentlemen. What do you think?
We'll let you know. But it's good. Damn good.
It isn't.
It's not. It's terrible. Also, what is Billy's fucking problem with grandmas? This is the second pitch in a row where he's been like, don't do this because your grandma does it. Like, calm down.
Yeah. And also, like, could someone please, like, if you can't get him to sort of replicate human emotions, can you at least coach him on breathing? He gets like three words into a line and is like, buddy, what are you doing? You're an athlete. And that music, oh my God, it's the punchline principle. Like, do not show the comedy.
Mm-mm.
Studio Billy on the Sunset Strip.
Yes, but anyway.
Hi, Joe. Sorry.
Afterward, Evie and Billy cross each other in the hall and wish each other luck. And at the office the next day, Amanda gathers everyone around the phone as Midline calls with the news. She has a pretty good poker face. It keeps everyone in suspense, but they got it. Clip 12.
Good work. Now you get your raise. What raise? Oh, didn't Billy tell you? Well, of course he didn't. Then you wouldn't have worked so hard. Congratulations. What is she talking about?
I really don't like discussing my salary with coworkers. Is that okay?
No, it's not. This is how bosses get away with paying people who aren't white or male less than their peers. Mm-hmm. So talk about your salaries at the workplace. It is important.
Yeah. Also, your boss clearly wants you guys to fight. So maybe think about that. Like, I know you're used to it because it's Amanda and this is a soap, but Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, Allison.
So then Evie and her gigantic hair storm in and slap Billy in the face. Clip 13.
You bastard. You slept with me just to get our strategy.
Come on, Evie. Who was using who? You were trying to steal me away.
Oh, please, don't flatter yourself. And don't ever come near me again. Got that?
Anything for the account.
And then he goes to the corner and, like, gets high fives from the boys, which, like, disgusting. But
gross.
In fairness to Billy, Evie, your strategy was reuse old material no one at your agency was excited about. So give me a break.
Yeah. Also, this is on you.
Oh, 100%.
You anything wanted that happens to fuck as a- Billy. Exactly. Nothing good can come of that.
No.
Now you know. Live with it.
Yeah. So that night, Billy comes home with a bottle of champagne, possibly already kind of buzzed as he tells Peter he's got a date with a young lady, although the young lady he's referring to is Allison, and he pounds on her apartment door calling her name while she sits inside just trying to read her fucking magazine and ignore him. And he's like, remember what I said, you snooze, you lose, as she sits there regretful. And he tries one last time calling her honey, which is really over the line considering their last out-of-office interaction, and decides she loses. And when he returns to his own apartment, he sits on the coffee table, pops the bottle, decides to forego the glass, which just as well, it's an old-fashioned glass, trash, just swigs straight from the bottle, but then drops it on the rug because this victory is so hollow without someone to share it with. And the best part of this is that he gets champagne all over his mouth. So it just looks like he's like drooling like a literal baby.
Yeah.
Boo. Let's close it up with our A plot. Peter messes with Bobby's cable.
Business.
There it is.
Oh, this entire plot line is like, my notes are just like ellipses, question marks,
yeah.
the letter F. Like, I don't, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. Dumb. It's so dumb. So Alicia wakes up on Peter's condom sheets. They're even more clearly visibly condoms in the daylight.
Yes, they definitely are.
Like, you wouldn't necessarily, you know, squint to see what they are, but once you know, it's impossible not to see them.
It really is. They look very penis-y.
Yeah. So she wakes up to Peter kissing on her, and she's not into it today. She's worried about their scheme to bring Bobby down. Even though this was all her idea, she now feels bad about making Bobby out to look like a mobster. But then admits her real fear may be that once she has the cable company and Peter has avenged his father, Peter's going to ditch her. Clip 14.
Well, what else can I say to convince you?
Say you'll marry me, Peter.
Oh. Well,
no,
obviously, but also just asking him to say he will marry her doesn't obligate him to anything, counselor. Come on.
Yeah, no. It's like pinky swear? Oh,
yeah.
Okay then.
Furthermore,
pinky swore.
She's okay. Also only asking to do it after this is all over. Like, are you crazy? It's like you don't know you're on a soap. You do it before.
Yeah.
Anyway,
it's like you don't know you're in a soap. Yeah.
Well, yeah. And also, like, you know, he tried to kill his last girlfriend, right? Like, you think he's not going to try and get out of this? He is. But anyway, Peter claims nothing would make him happier. So then she sensuously licks the envelope full of incriminating paperwork and gets him to also lick it. It's so unsexy. Like, yeah, now let's fuck with our gluey mouths all over each other.
Plus, I'm just looking that it's like, oh my God, someone's going to get a paper cut and it's just going to be brutal. Been there.
So then Peter shows up unannounced to bug Amanda at work, just as she's coming down from the business balcony, which we haven't seen in a while. I was happy to gift that again. And while they're bantering, some office flunky hands Amanda executed contracts from Bobby, and Peter's face visibly falls as she tells him all about her board seat because, oh no, he can't make her collateral damage in his evil schemes. But he's so non-poker-faced that when she notes his expression, he quickly recovers and then is like, bye. So, at his office, Peter puts a hanky over the phone receiver and tells a TV reporter about an envelope full of dirt about Bobby. But the guy's already excited about the story, which is why it's too bad Peter doesn't want him to pursue it, because innocent people will be affected. And the reporter's like, sucks to be them. Goodbye.
Like, he's already in makeup. He has a little doily in his collar. So, hilarious.
So after Amanda's just realized that Billy came to a private residence to make a fool of her with a decoy folder, as we already discussed, she and Bobby start fooling around on the couch until she glances at the teeny tiny TV and somehow makes out a photo of Bobby shaking the senator's hand, barely visibly captioned, cable scandal, clip 15.
What the heck is this?
Parisi, a mobster from a known Miami crime family, is also accused of making illegal campaign contributions to the senator's campaign, allegedly in order to secure licenses for a cable network he's involved in. Parisi, due to Los Angeles, was unavailable for comment, as was the senator. The Cable Commission is currently investigating these serious charges, promising swift prosecution. We'll be back in a moment with sports from Bill Fanning.
Oh my God.
That's a bunch of lies.
I think my favorite part is new to Los Angeles. It's like...
I know. It's like when local papers my grandmother's used to, Ms. Mazzoni had a picnic, nothing was happening. So they were just people return to town to have lunch with family, who cares? Also, they'll say allegedly about the investigation, but not the fact that he's a gangster. Guy, you're going to get sued.
Yeah.
Everything about this story and the fact that they're already calling it Cable Scandal or Cable Gate, even though presumably this is the first story on it.
Yes.
Why do I care? Who cares? Cable, whatever.
So the next day, a swarm of reporters has staked out the D&D office and are sticking microphones in Amanda's face when she gets off the elevator. She didn't know about any of this and is as shocked as everyone else. And security guards try to usher everyone away, but Peter pushes through, and she tells him how freaked out she is, adding that if her bosses hear about her involvement, she'll lose her job. But, aren't her bosses Peter and his cabal of investor doctors? Don't they still own the agency? Wasn't that what happened?
Yeah, I thought so.
Okay, that's what I thought, too. But anyway, Peter doesn't mention that and just helps her get out. And then it's hours later, after dark, they're parked in Peter's car somewhere. Amanda doesn't know what they're doing. Then a car pulls up behind him. And hey, it's that David Naughton is Lou Chandler, formerly one of Peter's college buddies, which makes me think he might be Jack Wagner's buddy in real life to be doing this one-off role. Because David Naughton's a going concern as a character actor.
Yeah.
He's not the usual soap nobody that they get for these parts. But anyway, Lou is on the Cable Commission, and he thinks they can keep Amanda's name out of the charges against Bobby since Peter says Amanda didn't know about all the shenanigans. The commission was waiting for Bobby to try something, and putting her on the board was just so he'd have another person to blame when shit went bad. But Lou will keep her out of it if she tells the commission everything she knows. And she protests that she doesn't know if Bobby did anything, but Peter talks over her, committing her to testify. And when Lou leaves, Amanda says Bobby knew how important it was to her that he wasn't crooked. She won't tolerate being lied to, except for how she already did let the Palm Springs lie slide and nothing came of it. Just bringing that up again.
Also, somehow she and Bobby have not had a conversation about this in a full 24 hours at least.
Yeah. Yes.
On camera or off. Sure. Mm-hmm.
So the next day, Alicia's at Bobby's as he anxiously watches news crews massing outside his house. And he asks about the cable license. She says it's on hold. Plus, there's a rumor Amanda's talking to the FCC, which Amanda herself hears Alicia say as she comes in behind them. And when Bobby comes over there, this time she's standing on a stair while he's on the floor so that they can see into each other's eyes.
Mm-hmm.
She's cold. She says she hasn't talked to the FCC yet, but she will if Bobby doesn't tell her what's happening. And the theory is that Vince set Bobby up once he found out that Amanda had joined the board. And she's like, yeah, about that, why did you put me on the board? And instead of answering the question, he just snaps that he's innocent. She has to believe him, and she wishes she could. And he watches her legs walking away, which, I get it, but is now the time? I'm just asking. Yeah. Guy. And in his office, Peter studies a chessboard with no opponent. When I get it. He hears someone enter the outer office, and then Amanda's in his doorway. She feels so stupid for believing Bobby. He denied everything, but she could tell he was lying. She hates needing to be held, but she does, and Peter obliges, which is, of course, when Alicia walks in and sees them, and it's the exact move that happened with Matt and David at the bowling alley, two episodes ago. She leaves before saying anything. Think of another idea, guys.
Yeah.
And the next day, Peter enters his office to find Alicia waiting to throw things at him. And she's also here to answer our questions. This is a long clip, but it actually gets through a lot of shit. Clip
it does. 16.
You're a lying, sticking pig. I checked. Your father's dead, all right, but no one in the Parisi family had anything to do with it.
Alicia, take it easy.
No suicide, no vendetta. You just wanted Amanda back, and you used me to do it.
Where did you get this idea?
Tried my two eyes through that door in this office last night. So I had lots and lots of time to dig up the truth and decide what to do with it. So,
Here are my terms, Doctor. As soon as Bobby collapses, I get the cable company, the whole cable company. And I'm going to need immediate investors. And you are going to secure those investors for me. And as far as our personal relationship, it'll continue as is, with you servicing me both socially and in the bedroom. Oh, one more thing. From now on, stay the hell away from Amanda.
And what if I don't agree to your terms?
I'll tell Amanda that Bobby is innocent and you set him up. You see, all paper trails lead to you and only you. I was very careful. What? No comment? No witty comeback? Understandably, you're shaken. Tell you what, why don't we seal the deal with a kiss? You loved that last time. I'll let you know when I need you again. Don't forget.
So she was very careful about making sure that he would go down for whatever this blackmail. But then she didn't check until now to see what was going on with his dad and the Parisis. Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, you know, I realized emotions are high, but like, his dad is still dead. You don't have to be that rude about it. Just kidding.
Seriously. A ruptured appendix? What a baby. Jeez. Okay.
Your dad is dead, but hey, wait a minute. Say you're sorry. Anyway. Yeah. The best part is that after all this, she's still making him stay on the hook. Like, no, I don't trust you, but let's keep fucking. Like,
yeah.
Okay.
And what does servicing her socially mean? He like calls and makes reservations. Okay. Cool. I also don't enjoy doing that. So, I should have a word with Dan.
He has to make all the plans with their couple friends. Like, are we going to have a game night? Why am I always one that organizes these things? Because that was the deal.
Yeah, oatmeal cookies, no raisins. Figure it out. That was the deal.
So when Amanda gets home that night, Peter's waiting at her door, not to throw things at her. He thinks he knows who went to the press about Bobby. She says Bobby thinks it was Vince, but Peter thinks it was Alicia. They can't say anything, but he thinks he knows how to expose Alicia. But until then, Alicia should not see Amanda and Peter together, which, like, maybe you should have started by having this conversation on a new invention called the phone. Like, I know it's TV, but good Lord. But anyway, Amanda thought Peter was in love with Alicia, but he wasn't. And Amanda knows he never was. And as he comes closer, she's like, clip 17.
Peter, don't.
What? Tell you that I love you? That I always have? We both know it. I better go.
Just love a don't on a soap. It's a classic. Mm-hmm. That's it.
So yeah. Let's close Speaking it up. Of chess pieces, they're all in place, I guess, for something.
Yeah, indeed. Ugh. So let's close it up by naming our episode MVP. I guess Alicia. I mean, she's, you know, set herself up for a lot of money, potentially. I don't know how much she's going to enjoy the other conditions that come with that. But if it's true that she did insulate herself from discovery, not bad.
I'm going to say Michael, because he managed to think that he was in the catbird seat and not exactly do anything shitty to get there. So,
yeah,
he also didn't actively annoy me. That's something.
That's true. Least valuable player. Instead of saying Billy again, I'm going to say Evie, because fucking duh, you brought all of this heartache on yourself.
Yeah. And honorable mention to Allison for I think, understanding what's going on and not really doing anything about it.
Well, yes, not yet. Spoiler, she does try and it does not go anywhere.
Mm-mm. Next time on Again With This, Joe blackmails Jane, Alicia blackmails Peter, Gloria blackmails Alan and Seven of Nine. And speaking of numbers, when it comes to putting up with Billy's shit, Allison's still batting about 1,000. Speaking of 1,000, that's how many Maalocs you're going to need before you check out our visual aids, which you'll find for this and every other episode of Again With This at againwiththispodcast.com. That's also where you can find links to our very special 90210 book. Follow us on Twitter at AWT90210 and join our Patreon page at patreon.com/againwiththis, where any level of support gets you extra episodes. I'm Fat Account Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is dressed like Tara Ariano, and she's at Tara Ariano. And our producer is ballsy, good-looking young David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.
Whoops. Yeah, whoops.
I forgot that one.